Richie Neal, Massachusetts 1st District, my congressman, a Democrat. I want to ask you first about something that I think a lot of us have on our minds. You know, it's nice to have a guy who's been in Congress for a while. The seniority system works fine where we're concerned, and it raises an interesting question. The Committee on Ways and Means, you're the ranking Democrat. It is one of the most powerful committees in the Congress of the United States. If the Democrats take the Congress, will you be chairman of that committee?
Yes. In fact, I've certainly done all the work that you have to do inside of the caucus, inside of the committee, and outside of the caucus as well. So I think that there's little question about that, and I think that it's pretty obvious that the margins by which we would prevail would be substantial as well.
So for those of us who are lucky enough to live in your district, could that mean that we may do a little bit better because of your clout?
Well, I'd like to think that, but also I think that it provides the Colgate invisible shield for those of us of a certain generation.
Yep.
In the sense that, remember that the Ways and Means Committee has broad responsibility for taxes, trade, tariffs, Medicare, Social Security, welfare, pensions, and a small part of Medicaid. So the first thought that comes to mind is I would be the chief defender of hospital reimbursements across Massachusetts, New England, and the United States. And the thought there is very evident, and that is that Medicare now pays for more than 50% of the revenue at hospitals across Massachusetts. So protecting that revenue stream would not only be very important, but I would also have an opportunity to defend the priorities offered by Social Security. You know, the Social Security debate is periodically in front of us, even though President Trump indicated that he would not touch Social Security. Republicans in Congress have said that they would like to change Medicare and they would like to change Medicaid. So I would be well positioned to defend those traditional entitlement initiatives. And at the same time, I think that it's fair to say that I've earned a reputation from Republicans as to when the argument arrives as being well informed.
Talk to me about the wall. The most extraordinary thing I've seen in recent days is that the President of the United States says maybe we should pay for his wall out of the military allocation in the military budget. Assume it was legal, and there are many people who think it wasn't. I just had Congressman John Faso on my air, and he made the point that the armed forces need repair, that the ships aren't working right, that the planes aren't flying right, and that how do you argue for all that money for the military and then say we have enough to take the wall out of that?
Well, the president said during the campaign that the Mexicans were going to pay for the wall. I guess that that's an argument that no longer exists. And then he insisted that in the negotiations leading up to the omnibus spending bill that passed a few days ago, he insisted that there would be money in there for the wall. Well, the truth is, when you put the magnifying glass on what he said, it doesn't stand up. There is money in there to repair the electronic devices that are part of the wall, but there's no money in there for additional spending. And I think that the idea that you would go to the defense budget and call the wall a national security issue really doesn't make any sense at all. The defense budget right now, the Navy is retooling in the direction of more sophisticated submarines, which is very important to many parts of Western Massachusetts. You have many suppliers across Western Massachusetts. General Dynamics in Pittsfield is another example that comes to mind. And I don't think they're prepared to build a wall. I think they're better positioned to offer support for the discipline which they advertise.
So, Richie Neal, talk to me a little bit about this omnibus tax bill that just passed. Seems to me the Democrats got a great deal in it. I mean, things which we all expected to go because of the Trumpisms, women's health, and things of that kind. How'd you manage to negotiate that?
Well, I was very I think, available for the Democratic leadership. They talked to me on a number of the tax measures that were included in the bill. In addition, there was more money for broadband spending. There was more money for infrastructure spending. Many of the issues that are Democratic priorities prevailed. And in fact, I think any objective analysis would conclude that we were very successful in outmaneuvering the administration in terms of maintaining our priorities. And they were willing to acquiesce because they were afraid that they'd be blamed for a government shutdown. Now, let me say that the system under which this was done needs a lot of improvement. There are 12 spending bills annually that should be separated and passed on that basis. But it's become impossible now even to pass budget resolutions in the House and in the Senate, even though McConnell and Ryan said that they would get both done. They were not able to do it this year, and that's because you have more purists in Congress. Mm. They find it more safe to vote against everything, and they find that any opportunity to perhaps secure accommodation from the other side to be treasonous. So they're very good at standing outside and yelling and screaming about what they're not for. The more difficult challenge is trying to put together something that they could be for. But on all counts, everybody believes that the Democratic priorities in this omnibus bill were all met.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And I have to say, congratulations. Okay,
Thank you. So
now let's talk a little bit about the gun debate. We've got about 3 minutes to do this in. I know you've met with students. I know this is very important to you. Do you think that the Congress is capable of doing anything on this?
I'm ever so hopeful. I think that I've been part of these discussions and debates for a long period of time, and I think that there's a role here for principled participation, and I think that it's just beyond me why we can't agree on mental health background checks. 85% of the American people support that. I think, for example, if you can't get on a plane because you're on a no-fly list, you ought not be able to buy a gun. I don't see anything wrong with suggesting that 21-year-olds, that be the mandatory age for buying a gun. I think that spousal abusers ought not to be able to buy a gun. And, you know, I think if the Massachusetts laws were simply adhered to throughout much of the country, that I think that you would find a much more safe nation. And in addition, I think these students have been helpful in the sense that they're turning, I think, much of the outrage that we all felt into constructive conversation and channeling their emotions for good purpose. Now, I also think that it's very important to say, when you talk about gun regulations, that I'm not aware of any Democrat in the House or the Senate who is saying, let's get rid of the Second Amendment. So that's nonsense. And I'm also not aware of any Democrat who's saying, well, look, we are interested in taking away the guns from legitimate sportsmen, hunters, or collectors. There's none of that talk. But a mental health background check is a very different argument. And, you know, what happened in Newtown, what happened certainly in Florida, there is broad evidence here, and Columbine as well, of a mental health issue that these gunmen all used. And I think that when you consider the havoc that they created, when we, every single day in most of our lives, we've either kissed a child goodbye, going to school and anticipating they'd be home in the afternoon, dropped the child off at school anticipating they'd be home in the afternoon. And so a gunman with mental health issues all of a sudden goes in and invades this space. And in each one of these instances, I think a mental health background check would have prevented what had happened. And I think students in that instance are very helpful to the debate.
You know, I got a minute. Did a recent interview with Congressman John Faso, who said, wait a second now, a universal background check is not a good idea because what about the father who wants to give the kid a gun? And in fact, the kid may have a mental health problem.
Well, all the more reason to say that before that weapon is passed on, that there be some sort of adjudication as to whether or not that individual is mentally fit and sound to have the gun. I mean, there could be a family that has two or three people in it that are emotionally uneven. And so just passing the gun around in the House doesn't make a good deal of sense to me.
I always love talking to my congressman from the 1st District of Massachusetts, Democrat Richie Neal. Very proud of you, Richie, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Alan.